Welcome to episode 93 of the Geocaching Podcast. I'm your host, XPunkX, with Daryl W4. If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with other listeners, and that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. We have a voicemail line, and that's 206-350-3GPS. And we're on Twitter, twitter.com/GCPodcast. Well, Daryl, how you been?
Not bad.
We don't actually have him on to this week. Well, he's on the chat room, but he's not here live with us.
Yeah, he was unable to join us for some fits of coughing, and we didn't want to subject anyone to that, especially Montu. So, unfortunately, he's taking the week off.
Yeah, he's not feeling real well. Last week, as you may have noticed, his voice is a little bit out of the weather, and he says, "Trust me, he sounds worse than the devil." Because we were just speaking about him before we started recording, and Geek Boy said, "Speak of the devil," and he said he sounds worse than the devil. So, Montu, we're actually glad that you're taking the week off. Get some rest, drink some tea. Hopefully, you'll be feeling better by next week. Daryl, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing really well. We had great weather out here. I think you guys did too, actually, didn't you?
Yeah, man. Today it was really, really warm, and I was stuck inside without any windows.
Oh, I know. We were up to something like 58 degrees. I didn't hear what it was, just that we broke our all-time record for high temperature. Boy, you know, I just really didn't want to be stuck inside today. This weekend, though, we got to go out. Finally got out to do some photography. I don't think I've had a chance to do that for like 4 months now. And got to do a little bit of caching. On the photography front, though, just a reminder that Thursday is going to be the 12 of 12 for anyone who wants to try participating. That's a lot of fun if you haven't tried that. But for caching, we actually did Sunday. Pretty much we went out just to find some virtual caches and maybe a few other caches scattered in there. And that was a blast. I'd forgotten how much I love virtual caches. But what was it, Friday night, Andy, that you and I had a little conversation on the phone trying to hopefully get some podcast production stuff tuned up a bit.
Yeah, it was. It was actually, was it? I think it was Saturday. Either way, we had a cool conversation, spent probably, an hour working on the podcast stuff, trying to get the audio to even sound a little bit better than we have before. And as always, when we talked about, anything and everything too, which is a lot of fun.
And hopefully the conversation will pan out, though. I'm thinking it's probably going to take a little bit more time to put the show together this week. Just as you try to figure out how it all works.
Yeah, but you know, I'm up for that. It's a lot of fun, and you know, like I said, we enjoy giving our listeners the best audio quality that we can get. So I'm up for the challenge. So you know, it will probably take me longer, but hey, what the heck?
And I'm sure the end product's going to be worth it.
I really hope so. This weekend it was warm again, but I didn't have any caching this weekend. I really, really, really was, you know, bugging to get out and get caching, but we just had a busy schedule, so we didn't get to go caching. We did give blood, though, which is a lot of fun. If you've never done it, I suggest trying that out. We gave blood at the local Red Cross, and like you said, you know, we talked about podcasting stuff, and I also found this cool website. I'm not really sure how to say it. I think it's Akoha, maybe, .com, akoha.com, and it's kind of like a pay it forward type of a game. You buy these cards, and you can kind of, you like, for instance, I would take Daryl up for coffee or whatever and give him this card and have like buy coffee for a stranger or whatever. Well, you're not really a stranger, but you know, and then give you the card, and then you could log it on the website and then pay it forward to somebody else and see how it's gone there. It seems pretty cool. It's kind of still fairly young. Go ahead and check it out. We'll go ahead and put a link to that on our show notes, which can be found at geocachingpodcast.info.
Now, isn't that the one that they were talking about on Net Night, I think it was?
I didn't catch that. It might have been. Did you? What did they say about it?
I believe it is. And it's basically they're trying to create a game around paying it forward, if you will.
It seemed pretty cool. I mean, you have got playing cards and it seemed pretty cool, and the playing cards are like $5 for like a deck. I'm not sure how many come in the deck, but it seems fairly cheap and fairly fun. Go ahead and check it out. If anyone's using it already, Let us know what you think. We've got a voicemail line at 206-3503-GPS. And after Monday, I was playing with the sendmehome.com after I was listening to the podcaster. It seems pretty cool, too. That's a little bit like Travel Bugs, but without, you know, the geocaching aspect. You can, you know, do anything with it. Check that out, too. Yeah, Daryl, did you get a chance to look at sendmehome.com?
No, I haven't, and that's just simply a matter of not having enough time, but it does look like a pretty cool alternative to using Groundspeak tracking, in part because it doesn't necessarily have to be like in a cache. You can track it outside of the cache, you know, drive it to Mount Rushmore, for instance, take some pictures at Mount Rushmore, and you can actually log that it was there rather than having to find a cache nearby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely sounds cool, and it's something I'm going to be playing a little bit more with. So with that, we move on to our news section. This week, we saw that Garmin and Asus team up to build a co-branded LBS-centric mobile phones. The announcement was made February 4th to build the Garmin Asus Nuvi phone series. A new Garmin Asus Nuvi phone model will be announced at the Mobile World Congress trade show in Barcelona, Spain, February 16th through the 19th. The original Garmin Nuvi phone that was announced in 2008 will be rebranded as the Garmin Asus Nuvi phone G60. The Garmin Asus Nuvi Phone G60 is expected to be delivered in the first half of 2009, and additional information about the Garmin Asus Nuvi Phone G60 will be released while at the Mobile World Congress trade show, and we'll link to that press release in our show notes again at geocachingpodcast.info.
Also in the news, Google has released Google Earth 5 just last week. And the new version now allows the GPS functions without paying for that plus upgrade. So it's a lot more convenient for us cachers. And also we have all of those great other features we've always had, along with some new ones, including being able to kind of search the oceans. So great site. We'll put the link up there, or a great app, actually, because that's one that you download and install. But we'll put the link up on the show notes, and that's geocachingpodcast.info again.
Another thing that's making news from Google is the Google Latitude. This is the new option for Google Maps, and it allows you to share your real-time location with your friends. And support is currently available for most color BlackBerries, the Symbian S60, and Windows Mobile 5 devices. We'll throw that up, link up there in the geocachingpodcast.info again. And it's a little bit like Brightkite and some other things like that has the same kind of where you are support to it kind of social networking thing. I haven't got a chance to check it out because I don't have a supported device, but I would recommend doing that. It's just kind of another, it's not geocaching necessarily related, but kind of has that same feel to it as far as if you like geocaching, you may like this. So,
I was listening to Twit and Robert Scoble was on talking about it. He said the thing that's really weird about it is that it actually does do like real-time tracking as you're walking. It's following you as you walk. But he managed to overload the architecture or something like that. You know, they only allowed, I think he said, like 100 or so followers. And he has a few more followers than that. So, unfortunately, you know, he crashed it.
Leave it to Scoble to crash things. You know, Twitter, you know, he'll crash things.
Well, that's his job.
Exactly. Now, tonight, we are talking about geocaching here in our main topic, and it's something that we come across too often here with geocaching, especially lately, and that's bomb scares. So we're going to talk a little bit about how to avoid that cache detonation, how to create a good cache that that's not going to get blown up by the bomb squad, how to avoid that. Daryl, do you want to briefly touch on one of the latest incidences that we've heard about?
Yeah, well, Podcaster actually had talked about this one a bit, and unfortunately, it's another situation where someone had found a cache near their workplace, and the person who placed it actually had gotten permission, but no one at the, I think it was a boatyard? Can't really remember off the top of my head, but no one there knew that this was supposed to be there, found an ammo can, and called the cops. So, unfortunately, the bomb squad came out and blew it up.
Now, one of the things that was cool in that story is that they also, then the geocachers and the bomb squad came to like an agreement where the bomb squad would actually sign up for a geocaching account. And so that way, anytime that they saw a new cache that was placed, they'd have on record, you know, where the caches were at. And so they, you know, wouldn't have to so much always be like, oh, that's a cache, let's blow it up. You know, they can see. And I think that's an awesome idea. I think that, as long as we can, as geocachers can inform the listeners, or can inform the local area people, that, you know, bomb squad, the policemen, the firemen, about the caches that are in their area and what exactly caches are, I think we'll have a lot less bomb squads and bomb scares going on. Daryl?
Yeah, you know, it really does help if you can enlighten the law enforcement so that they know what's going on. But one of the recent stories also, it might have been this one, also mentioned that if they can't see what it is and there's any doubt, they're going to just blow it up anyway. You know, they're not going to take the risk to anyone or anything that this might actually be a bomb and just have geocaching labels slapped on it. So really, clear containers are the best way to go. Even though those ammo cans work really well, the plastic lock and locks might have a better chance of surviving, especially if the bomb squad gets a hold of it, because they can see it, see what's inside of it, and they're not as likely to blow it up.
Yeah, and you know, just because, like you said, you know, just because it's got geocaching stickers on it, I mean, I don't think that they've ever had an incident where a bomb has had geocaching stickers on it. But I mean, anyone can that knows about geocaching can go ahead and do that and make a bomb that's going to look just like a geocache. And it's really hard to do that if it's going to be in a clear container. So I would say that's one of the first things that we can do is get clear containers. And like you said, too, you know, get the landowner's permission. And because that's, as stated on geocaching.com, that's one of the main things that you need to do anyways. I know it's a pain in the butt. I know every time I go to put a cache out, it's like, do I have to, you know, get this person's permission? But yes, you do, because if you don't, you're going to end up having, you know, at least get muggled by officials, most likely, because people are going to wonder what's going on in their land, why people are starting to, you know, come and go in and walk through the woods and, or wherever they're at, and try to find the cache. So I would say definitely put it in, you know, get the landowner's permission. And you should also, I would say, make sure that you inform the landowner exactly what geocaching is, and to also to talk to their people that they employ too, because if you're gonna put like you said in the story here, the landowner may have known about it, but not everybody that's involved in that land, all the workers, the maintenance people like that, are gonna know that this is actually a cache. So I would say definitely go one step further than getting their permission. Make sure that they tell their employees that this is what this is. Any other ideas, Darryl?
Well, and it especially goes if they have any security personnel. You know, go and make sure that the security team knows what the geocache is, what it looks like. You know, it might be good to even get some pictures of the cache, maybe even, you know, put it in and get some pictures. And then give them those pictures that they can hang up, and people will see it and know, okay, yeah, this is what the cache looks like. This is not going to be a problem. And let them know, you know, people are going to be out there doing the drunken bee dance. Don't worry about it. They're cachers. You know, say hi if you want. You know, if they want hints, maybe you can give them some hints too, that kind of stuff, you know. And some of the security personnel we've run into actually kind of got a kick out of it. And we've heard stories on more than one occasion, especially through, you know, Cachemaniacs, and even after we stopped recording with Cachemaniacs, the security personnel that get into the hunt and kind of really enjoy it. You know, sometimes it will be, oh, we have no idea where this is, we know it's here somewhere, to, you know, oh, I know right where it is, you're getting hot, you're getting cold. And, you know, it just gives everyone a little bit more fun.
Now, I want to touch on two questions that were raised into the chat room. Mundu says, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, that if the cache is in a public place, whose permission should we be asking? And that's the same, I guess, kind of touches on what Sydney Ann said, too. She said that who gets permission for a guardrail or an LPC in the fence cap at a corner of a lot? There goes in, I mean, into the whole, do we put caches in places like that? Like, do we put them in a guardrail because we can't get permission? I mean, I would say at least get street permission, you know, people who the city, you know, inform the city and the police, even if there's not like a, can I place this here with permission, but let the police know that that's going to be there so they don't find thing people are, you know, looking weird along the guardrail. And Mundu, I would say too that, you know, if it's a public place, which is probably where most caches would be, I usually don't hunt caches that are not, that are on private property, just because it's, I don't know, I find it a little bit strange. But I would say that I would say, you know, if it's a public place like park or a cemetery, there's some sort of land manager, I mean, that, you know, that, that manages the park or manages the cemetery. So definitely be asking there. And Geek Boy posted a couple links in our, you know, chat room, and we'll go ahead and link to those in our chat room or in our show notes. But Daryl, any other thoughts?
Well, really, getting permission for your cache is probably the hardest part. You know, the park systems, the, you know, anywhere that you have an obvious land manager, that's the easy ones to go after, because they'll have one authority. You call them. If, you know, if they don't know necessarily who the right person is, they can usually connect you to the right person through a series of phone calls. But it's those, you know, public property where no one really has authority over it that really get kind of tough. And you just got to kind of track it down, unfortunately. It will take a lot of legwork sometimes. And a lot of these city employees, unfortunately, aren't as eager to help as we'd like. But unfortunately, you got to do it. You can't just go placing caches assuming that it's public property, no one's going to care. Those are usually the ones that will get in trouble faster than anything else, because no one knows it's there and everyone's watching it a lot of the time.
Well, and Bastchaz also says, you know, when in doubt, you know, don't leave it out as far as, you know, the ammo cans, don't put it there. When in doubt, if you can't figure out who it belongs to, don't put the cash out. And a lot of places too say that, you know, they're especially parks, they have a specific form that you can fill out for permission. And that goes back to, you know, just asking at the right place. You know, you go to your local parks department. Maybe it's not going into the park and finding a ranger, because they may not know. Although they should, if the park allows caching, the rangers definitely should know that caching is allowed there. But yeah, I would say go to the offices of the parks, ask them where you could, you know, how you go about placing caches. If they have no idea what it is, go ahead and tell them this is a cache. Come, go in with some information. If you have a cache container that you can take with you, some of the information that can be found on the Caching You site, different places like that where you can find information on what exactly caching is. Make sure you inform people, because again, if people don't know about it, it's going to be received as a bomb. I would say another thing too is make sure that you, like, when you place it, look back, stand back and say, if I didn't know what this is, what does it look like? And especially, I mean, that goes out, it's just dumb to put caches in, like, pipes, PVC pipes, pipes like that. It's just dumb because it looks like a pipe bomb. You know, make it.
Well, going back to the permit issue, though, for a minute, a lot of cachers really don't like those permits. But in my opinion, that's your best friend, because that's a well-established, very, very clear guideline to what they're looking for. And it's a very obvious permission for you as the cache placer. So if a question ever were to arise, you have that permit that says, yes, I have the authority to put it there. And that will tell you, usually, most of the parks, I think, will have to move annually. Some of them only want to cache out for like 3-4 months due to concerns over environmental issues or whatever. But right away, before you even place that cache, you know what the expectations are, and you have, you know, the paperwork to prove that, yes, you went through that, these people signed off on it, so everything's okay. If you don't have that permit, you have to go and track someone down, get the permission, you know, make notes of who that was, so that if something does arise, you can let the people know who had given you the permission. But, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, filtering down, because, again, you have that permit. They have a process. You have the process that you have to go through. so everyone knows that everything's okay, and it just really makes it so much easier, despite the fact that, yeah, it's more paperwork.
Now, Mundu in our chat room says that they spray paint their lock and lock containers. Should they be leaving them unpainted? Personally, I'd say yes.
Yeah, you know, I think it really depends. You know, if you want to spray like the top, that's probably okay if the sides are clear. But you have to make it pretty obvious that it's not going to be a bomb. You know, they want to be able to look through it. So if you're going to spray paint it, make sure that there's still a visible panel or two. Probably I'd leave at least a 4 panels that they can look through and see, yeah, this is not dangerous. Or maybe you leave the top and the bottom and paint just the sides.
And now, also, you know, I would say, too, that, like, I mean, there's something to say for camo, but, I mean, even when I've got a couple that are on, a walking trail, and I use a clear lock and lock, and I go ahead and I just throw sticks and stuff, camo like that. I mean, it makes it a little bit more obvious, but it's not always, you know, because you see that big pile of sticks, but if you go ahead and, you know, leave it clear, if someone does find it, they're not going to be scared to open it. I mean, I don't blame people, muggles, for being skeptic and thinking everything is a bomb. I mean, we've had a lot of crazy stuff going, at least in the United States, here where me and Daryl are from. But, you know, I don't blame them. So I would
say... Well, and it's not necessarily just the bomb scares. There have been a couple of situations where people have actually found caches and used them as drug stashes. And I can't even imagine that, but it kind of really makes you think that, you know, yeah, someone could use it for something nefarious other than trying to blow something up.
True, true. Now, I want to remind everybody, too, that we are recording live here, and if you want to give us a call, put in your input, give us a call at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. If you're in our chat room, just go ahead and press the next to talk or request to talk in the upper right-hand corner. If you're not and you're just dialed in, go ahead and press *8 on your keyboard, and that'll get you in the request to talk line. If you're listening to this later and you want to put in some input, our voicemail line is 206-350-3GPS. We would love to hear from you. Daryl, anything else that you can think of to keep your caches from being blown up?
Well, Montu brought up a good point here. They're having a little conversation in the chat room about location. But his point is that he has an advantage because he's got a large wilderness preserve that so far has 40 caches in it. And I think a lot of the reason we're seeing more of the cache detonation stories is because there are so many more caches being placed in the less rural area, shall we say. You've got the suburb parks, and people are placing caches in those, and a lot more people are there. You know, plus, no one really would think of someone trying to blow up, you know, a wilderness preserve. It just wouldn't make sense. But blowing up a park, you know, that's something they're probably a little bit afraid of.
And I think part of this, too, is going back to, I mean, I think a lot of responsibility falls on the cache placer, but some of it also goes ahead and places responsibility on the finder, too, because not always, I mean, if you're going to find a cache that's near a guardrail or, you know, in a sign or near a sign that's near the road, you've got to watch out for muggles. And I know that you can't always avoid those. I mean, I've been in those same situations where I'm looking for a cache and I see that it's next to, you know, a street or whatever, and I don't, you know, I can't avoid the muggles, but sometimes, you know, you have to think about when you're hunting the caches out, if there's muggles there, it's not worth finding the cache because you're going to compromise it. They could call the police on you, on the, you know, the cache and blow it up. I mean, sometimes if it's a well-hidden cache, they're not going to find it anyways. You know what I'm saying? Like, but if they see you, they're gonna wonder what you're doing poking around this guardrail or street sign or anything like that. We've got GeoAddict in, who has requested to talk. Welcome to the call, GeoAddict.
Hi. I don't know if you know, I used to be a city manager, and so we deal with this, and so I take a different kind of a municipal view of things. And, you know, don't be, the main message to geocaches is don't be afraid of talking to people. There's a lot of positive things about geocaching. I've talked to the local businesses. I've talked to the police. They're very open to learning about the sport, especially as it's growing and the positive aspects of the sport. The biggest way to destroy any credibility that the sport has is to just hide it, be sneaky about it, and then have a bomb incident occur.
It's always good for the local communities whenever more people come through, because that's more opportunity for business and, you know, whatnot. So, you know, businesses are usually going to be open for it. They might not want it on their property for liability reasons. But yeah, if you find the right people, I'm sure that you're going to find someone that's anxious to put it out there just to get some more traffic.
Yes, I've been able to show people through some of these businesses through logs that people do. At the geocachers, once they come into the community, they stay to shop, to go to a restaurant. So I can show a return. And that's where I really like, you know, and really try to support, especially those businesses and communities that I say get it. The ones that understand that geocaching is a positive thing and that it's something to promote tourism. And there, we all know that there are communities that get it and others that don't.
I would say, too, you know, I would reiterate there what GeoEdX said. Don't be afraid to talk to the landowners and the community managers and things like that. We are kind of afraid because we don't think people are going to understand our obsession and our hobby, but you know, it's the easiest way to keep from getting our cache blown up. Just be smart when you guys are placing caches, guys. In general, I would say just be smart, place them in clear containers, get your permission. Think about what it's going to look like when you're going to be, someone's going to be hunting these caches out. Daryl, any final comments before we close the show tonight?
Well, Montu was also mentioning, too, that setting up a booth at local park events can help raise public awareness. And the more that people are aware of geocaching and what it is, the less likely it is that they're going to be calling the police for a bomb scare in the first place.
And I would say, too, it's a good thing to get your, like Sydney Ann says, you know, they've got a local ranger in their area who's a cacher. We used to. We had a new park ranger come in. We kind of got thrown the responsibility of being the cash person for the parks department, and we took her out and we had, you know, a fun day with her. We showed her all about caching, and we took it on our responsibility to inform her and teach her how to cache, and so, you know, she can get out the information as far as the parks go about caches and even be responsible for placing some of the caches in the parks too.
Well, I'm sure that would be a lot of fun too. I always like taking out newbies and showing them the ropes, even though if they don't go back to it again. Just the experience is fun, and seeing what their reaction is pretty cool.
Yeah, and in closing, Unnamed Mike said, you know, the best tool is education and common sense. We cannot prevent this 100% of the time, but as far as, you know, education, common sense, we'll get fairly close. I mean, if we educate the people who are responsible for the areas, we'll go ahead and get, you know, this down to more than it is. I mean, you can go to the podcaster.com and see the days without a bomb scare, and it's gets up there, but then it goes back down, and it happens way too often. I would say just be responsible for on both ends, cash placing and cash hiding, cash placing and cash hunting. You know, look what you're doing when you place it. Think about what it's going to say. Anything else?
No, I think we're pretty good.
All right, well, if we don't have anything else here, join us every Tuesday as we talk about geocaching at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. We like hearing, you know, people live, you know, putting their input, so give us a call. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. You can also call our voicemail line 206-350-3GPS anytime and leave us a voicemail. It's the best way, especially if you just listen, if you can't make it live to our show, we still like hearing your input. Give us a call. It's a voicemail line. No one will answer, and we'll go ahead and play on the show. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next week.